How's everybody doing today? I'm Brandon Kiley. She is Megan Armstrong. The show is The Morning Blitz. We are coming to you live here on KCOU 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.FM. Coming up here in about 10 minutes or so, I'm starting to believe. We'll get into it and why I think this team might be better than we all expected. That's in about 10 minutes. And at 7:30, Kevin Van Valkenburgh. He's a senior writer for ESPN, the magazine. He wrote very eloquently about Ray Rice about a month ago. We'll get into the whole Ray Rice discussion and what he thinks has happened and what's transpired over the last few months now, really, coming up here at 7:30. But where I want to begin is with the Ray Rice situation and what's happening in the NFL right now and what's really more than anything happening with the reaction to the reaction. If you didn't hear yesterday, and I don't know how you couldn't at this point, Ray Rice was released from the Baltimore Ravens after the video of him striking his wife, and he struck his wife in an elevator, came out. It was released by TMZ, and all of a sudden, everything went haywire. Mm-hmm. The Ravens released him. The NFL shortly thereafter said he's suspended indefinitely. And Megan, the thing that comes to mind immediately, the Ravens and the NFL didn't suspend Ray Rice because they saw the video. They released him and they suspended him because we saw the video.
Right. No, yeah.
That's the thing that kills me.
Right. There are so many different directions to go with this, and if we had the time, I would go in all of them. But I wish that I could remember my exact reaction whenever I first heard of this in February without seeing the video. Because I really believe that just naturally people's reaction to this is drastically changed, as we saw yesterday, whenever you actually see him hit her. And the thing that there's a lot of this that bothers me, but what bothered me, like, emotionally, or like whenever I was watching it and I had a reaction to it, is how unaffected he was whenever he hit her. Like that, you can't convince me that's the first time he's ever done that.
Yeah, and that's one of those things where it's kind of, we just don't know, but I mean, he didn't react. Like,
no.
It was a cold reaction from him. Like,
he looked annoyed.
There. Yeah, he was mad that she wouldn't get up because he knocked her out. Like, he knocked her out and he was mad that she wouldn't move.
Right.
Like, so angry. Like, visibly angry. And the thing, though, is, like, when you see that video, and it was released, a couple months ago now, of him dragging his unconscious wife out of the elevator, what did people think happened in that elevator? Like, it wasn't like he pushed her and she hit her head on something. Like, he said that he hit her, and he said that he knocked her out. You don't just knock somebody out. Like, if I hit somebody, I'm not going to knock them out. I can hurt them. Right. I can make them bleed. I can make them kind of woozy. But I'm not going to knock somebody out. I'm a 6'1", 175-pound dude. There's just not a chance that I'm going to knock most people out. Now, if a 5'8", 210-pound running back punches a woman with all of his might and all of his force, yeah, that's going to knock somebody out. And that's what we saw. It was a straight right hook.
Yeah.
Like, he wound up and that's... I just don't know what we expected from this. What did we expect to see on this video that we didn't?
I don't think the question is what did we expect. It's what did the Ravens and the NFL expect.
That's a good question, yeah.
Like, okay, their excuse is that we had never seen the video before now, which you can choose to believe that or not, whatever. And then I think it was, I don't know exactly who said it, but somebody from the Ravens organization, maybe it was a collective statement, they said that what was on the video was drastically different than what Ray Rice told them happened, that maybe she instigated it, whatever. Okay, fine. We still saw the video of him dragging her out. What do you think happened in there? Mm-hmm. Seriously. Even if she instigated, she didn't harm him. He's the one who knocked her out. What do you think happened in there? So I think the main takeaway from that is obviously, okay, we are a part of it because we're the one who still supports this product. Yeah, we're a big part of this. But I think as far as enabling... We are accountable, but I think obviously the number one people accountable for that are the ones who employ them. And I wonder you looking for loopholes pretty much.
I just can't believe how bad the NFL messed this up.
Yeah.
Like I don't know how, and there's been no leadership. Like Roger Goodell, what are you doing? What were you thinking in the first place? Like you messed up the suspension. You messed up the reaction to the suspension. You messed up Like, everything that's happened over the course of the last 3 months, not just with Ray Rice, but with Josh Gordon, with other suspensions that have happened in the NFL, everything's been a reaction to the reaction. Mm-hmm. Now we're getting a new drug policy, supposedly, in the NFL. There was a new suspension policy for domestic abuse cases, which, by the way, we still have a defensive end for the San Francisco 49ers that was just accused of hitting his pregnant wife, who is still playing football. Like, last Sunday, he was playing football, and he was just part of the 49ers.
Greg Hardy's still playing.
I don't know where the leadership is coming from. And to be honest with you, I just don't think there is leadership right now in the NFL, and that falls on Roger Goodell. And I just don't know how Roger Goodell recovers from this. I'm not saying he's going to lose his job, because it's very hard for a guy that's making the NFL this much money, and by the way, he does work for the owners, and the owners are making money hand over fist right now. I don't know how that guy loses his job, but he has no credibility with these players. None whatsoever. Yesterday, his credibility, anything that he had, it's gone. It's officially over for Roger Goodell.
I don't know if I was glad that there were a lot of active players that were speaking out on it, but I can't remember a time where there was that many active players speaking out on how disappointed they were. And it's a good thing that they were. I'm glad they were. I saw an interesting tweet from kind of to broaden this to an entire domestic violence an athletes type thing, not just Ray Rice, even though he's the main point, obviously.
Are you going to say Alex Morgan?
I was. Because
that was weird.
Because she says, saddened, disgusted, and angry about Ray Rice and how the NFL Ravens handled the assault before footage came out. What a coward. Her teammate is currently under investigation for assault, Hope Solo.
Yeah.
Not to say that she supports her. I can't kind of correlate the two. Yeah. But at the same time, it kind of made me think about, okay, there's Hope Solo. There are many other athletes that are currently, I guess, going through this or whatever word you want to use for that. I don't even know what verb you would use for a domestic violence case. But I don't know. I think Ray Rice is just the video. I mean, we saw it happen. So now it's like, okay, we know exactly what he did, whereas we can't trick ourselves into believing with all these other athletes that it wasn't as bad as maybe we know it was.
I remember when this first all came together and when the first video came out of him dragging his unconscious, at the time, fiance out of the elevator, Dan Le Batard said that this was going to become the biggest scandal that we've ever seen in the NFL because there was video. And at the time, you know, it seemed like he would probably write it all kind of calmed down. And then the suspension came, it came to a head again. And then it all kind of came down again. It goes in this ebbs and flows of us reacting to what happens. And then we just kind of go back to, okay, we're going to go back into isolation. We're going to push that off to the back burner. And then when this video came out, Dan Le Batard all of a sudden became right. Like, this was the biggest scandal that you could possibly have. And it goes into, how did the NFL not know? It goes into how did the Ravens not do more? Not just because, and here's the other thing, and I don't want to be crass about this, but Ray Rice isn't very good anymore. If this is Adrian Peterson, I understand maybe sticking by the guy because, quite frankly, he's just a really good football player. But Ray Rice isn't good enough to receive this kind of help and this kind of guidance from the Ravens. He just didn't deserve that. And so when I see something like this happening and I see a team standing by him, and then I see yesterday, why is John Harbaugh the only one speaking? Where is the general manager? Where is the owner? Where is Roger Goodell? Yeah. Where are these people that told us that this happened, and then all of a sudden we see a video, and it's something entirely different? Where are these people?
I was listening to Mike and Mike on the way in on ESPN, and Mike Greenberg says if they had just drafted a player, all of those guys would have been out there for the press conference. Ozzie Newsome, all of them would have been out there. But whenever it's something that's actually serious and goes beyond draft, it goes beyond the player, honestly, nobody's to be found. And I think what's interesting to me is, yes, the video, the thing with the Ray Rice video is that it was brought to us. It was almost unavoidable. Like, if you were on the internet at all or even watching television, it was on ESPN yesterday multiple times, like on a loop.
Yeah.
You couldn't miss it. But there's information about all of these domestic violence cases out there if you choose to seek it. Like the Greg Hardy, like, transcription, it's out there. You can read it. It's very disturbing. But I think a lot of this, especially with people that are fans of the NFL or these specific players, it comes down to confirmation bias. they don't want to know that information. They don't want to know that Greg Hardy did all the things that the transcription clearly says that he did. Mm-hmm. But with this Ray Rice video, you couldn't avoid it. It was there. If you were alive yesterday, chances are that you either heard about it or you saw the video yourself. Or maybe both.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of, as far as why is this bigger than all the other cases? I think it's because the cold evidence was pretty much unavoidable to people, whereas where with Greg Hardy or Hope Solo or even Doriel Green Beckham here, you had to seek out that information to learn what they did. And a lot of people don't want to know.
It's the power of video. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one thing to have audio. It's one thing to have text. It's one thing to read or to hear about these things. It's completely different to watch it with your own eyes and to see, as you said earlier, the reaction that Ray Rice has as
or
his
not a reaction at all.
Yeah, as his unconscious wife is laying on the ground and he's trying to drag her out of the elevator. Not when he gets her out of the elevator, but as he's trying to kind of maneuver her through the elevator to get the door to close. The other mm-hmm. thing that was weird is, like, there's this person that comes by and he's, like, trying to move her feet so the elevator door will close.
Right.
Like, I watched that video and it was sickening. Mm-hmm. Like, you knew what to expect and you kind of knew what was coming, or you should have. And yet it's still startling to see a grown man hit a woman like that and hit to hurt. Like, he didn't hit her to, like,
to get her off of him.
Yeah. There was no, like, I don't know. I expected it to be that bad, and yet it was still worse than I could have mm-hmm. possibly expected. And that's just, I don't know. And I look at what Roger Goodell did, it was unacceptable. I look at what the Ravens did, it was unacceptable. I look at just the entire way the NFL approached this entire situation, and I just don't see any way, as I said earlier, that Roger Goodell can recover from this. I just don't see it.
Originally, whenever he changed the policy to 6 games and then the second time a lifetime ban, okay, we all were like, okay, good, you fixed it, or you didn't fix it, but you attempted to fix it. But that's my point. Now, after seeing this video, or even before I saw the video, I thought to myself, okay, so under the new policy, Ray Rice would be gone 6 games for this. That means that he would have to do this to her again.
Exactly.
In order to get a lifetime ban.
Do we really feel like that's some other woman? Okay, and here's the other thing is it's a required 6 games. So it's a weird policy where there's some people that wouldn't deserve 6 games. Mm-hmm. Like, there's some people that would get involved in something like this and maybe they didn't do anything mm-hmm. and they get 6 games immediately because that's just the requirement now. It's a new mandatory minimum in the NFL. It's Roger Goodell coming down with the hammer fist once again. And I thought like 2 years ago, we were all saying how he shouldn't have that. Well, this was a specific individual case where we all agreed, like, unanimously as one voice, Twitter, sports media, fans, everybody seemed to agree, get this guy out of your league.
Yeah.
Like, what is this guy doing still in your league? And yet Roger Goodell failed. He failed on this.
One last point just to kind of wrap this up. Jhené Rice actually just posted a statement on her Instagram account. It's pretty long, but I'm going to read it because her Instagram account is private. I checked. So somebody found it. But it says, I woke up this morning feeling like I had a horrible nightmare, feeling like I'm mourning the death of my closest friend. But to have to accept the fact that it's a reality is a nightmare in itself. No one knows the pain that the media and unwanted option... I think it means opinions. Opinions from the public has caused to my family. To make us relive a moment in our lives that we regret every day is a horrible thing. To take something away from the man I love that he has worked his ass off, for all his life just to gain ratings is horrific.
It's horrific, okay. Probably.
This is our life. What don't you all get? If your intentions were to hurt us, embarrass us, to make us feel alone, take all happiness away, you've succeeded on so many levels. Just know we will continue to grow and show the world what real love is. Ravens Nation, we love you. End quote. That concerns me.
This is victimization on the highest level. She was set up at a press conference with the Baltimore Ravens logo behind her, apologizing to Ray Rice mm-hmm. on national television.
And he didn't apologize to her.
She was apologizing to Ray Rice. This whole situation was handled so poorly by everybody involved, and I don't know how this could have been handled any more poorly. And then you see something like that, and it's like, What can you do? You know, like I want to just like take her and hug her and be like, you don't have to do this. Like you don't have to go through this. Like there are better things out there. And the sad thing is I looked up the statistics yesterday for domestic abuse cases. There's 1.3 million cases every single year in America. Every single year, there's 1.3 million.
Yeah. And you read that. I guess I just read the Janae Rice post, and obviously something mentally is not, she is manipulated. She's scared. I mean that you, so I looked up a statistic as well, and it said that around like 18 million mental health cases arise because of domestic violence issues, every year in America, roughly. So that's, I mean, it's just inevitable that this is just, I just hope it doesn't end the way that I fear it's going to end.
It's just spiraling. It's just spiraling at this point. You have reaction to the reaction from the NFL. You have reaction to the reaction from the media. You have everybody in between having their own spin or their own take on what's happening and what's going to be next and what did the NFL, when did they know it? And we'll get into all that with Kevin Van Valkenburgh of ESPN the magazine coming up here at 7:30. But I look at it and it's a really simple take, but this whole thing's just so sad. Like, it's just so disappointing and so saddening, and I feel like it all could have been handled in a better way. Coming up next, are you buying in yet? We'll get into a little real football talk a little bit to take your mind off of these heavy topics next after Mizzou's Week 2 win. That's next in the Morning Blitz, KCOU 88.1 FM and online, KCOU.FM.
Sasser to the left, tight end, tight left. Mock's going to fake it, bootleg back left. Step back, throw it into the end zone, wide open, Jimmy Hunt. Touchdown, Missouri. The fifth touchdown pass of the day for Matty Mock from the Kenton, Ohio. And with 7 minutes and 35 seconds to play, the Tigers lead it 48-21.
And welcome back. It is the Morning Blitz here on KCOU, 88.1 FM, and online at KCOU.FM. That play call brought to you by the Missouri Football Radio Network. So Mizzou wins again. This one in a little bit more convincing fashion, 49-24 over Toledo. And I got to tell you, Megan, I'm starting to buy in. I don't know if it's a good thing. I don't know if it's a bad thing. I don't know how this is going to end for me. But I'm starting to buy into the hype. Matty Mock looks good. The offense, once again, came up with some really big plays. The running game, solid. The defense looks pretty good. I mean, the pass rush is what we expected it to be. And this looks like a potential SEC East champion again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think part of that also has to do with, like, the only team that I see in the SEC East that scares me is Georgia. And I think that's a universe.
And they're terrifying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's like, and whenever I say the only team that scares me, they kind of account for, like, three teams. So it's like, so that's kind of a big fear. But as far as just, like, I don't really think that I have any expectations for this Mizzou team at all. I'm kind of just, like, watching every game, and, like, if they win it, cool. If they don't, then that's okay. I kind of thought that they'd probably lose a couple games. But I will say that they're entertaining. And the one worry that I had whenever I was coming into the season, after how entertaining the last team was every single game, you know, they had that streak for turnovers on defense all these games
which
in a row.
Which is still going.
Which
it's
is still going.
Crazy.
It's probably in like the 40s by now. I don't even know. But I had the worry that, okay, will this team be boring? Like, who are the weapons on offense? Like, I was kind of concerned about that. But I am entertained every time I watch this team. And I think that, I mean, I guess maybe I'm just really easy to please. But that's kind of all that I'm looking for this season so far, this early in the season.
Yeah. So I look at the first game of the year, and it was Marcus Murphy's return. That was the turning point in the game, and it was so clear. And then I look at last weekend's game, and once again, the turning point was extremely clear. This time it was Bud Sasser's fumble, or the forced fumble that he had. Matty Mock threw an interception. It was a late first quarter, and it looked like it was about to be a 14-14 game. They were driving. Toledo had the ball on the 10-yard line. And instead of Toledo getting the ball on the 10-yard line after the interception, Bud Sasser forces the fumble, Mizzou picks it up, and Mizzou goes in and scores, goes up 21-7, and the game's over from there. Bud Sasser talked about it, or excuse me, Jimmy Hunt talked about it and talked about what that fumble or forced fumble meant for Mizzou yesterday at Media Day.
You know, it meant a lot. It meant a lot. That right there, if they'd have scored that, if they'd have went down and scored when he got that interception, the game would have been tied at 14-14. But us making Bud making that big strip, and I recovered it, that right there changed the whole game, you know, changed the atmosphere. The crowd was silent. And, you know, it gave us the fuel to, you know, our fire and made sure we was able to go down and score.
The one thing that I will say about Mizzou, and we saw this a little bit last year, they don't lack confidence at all. They seem to believe in themselves more than a team at Missouri you would expect to. Like, they actually believe that they are going to be great this year. Like, yeah. They believe that they are one of the best teams, if not the best team in the country. And that seems to me like that would be a pretty rare thing. But it's been the case over the last few years with Mizzou.
I think whenever they first moved over to the SEC, it was more of, okay, we believe in, like, it was a chip on our shoulder kind of confidence. Mm-hmm. Like, we believe in ourselves because nobody else does, whatever. Now it's kind of like, all right, like, we're really great. Why aren't you believing in us? It's kind of like, you guys are missing out on something. Like, I promise you, we're really great.
We're really exciting. Like, we're good guys. I promise you, this is something cool.
It's not really a chip on their shoulder anymore so much as, like, hey, this is fact. Like, we're really good.
Yeah, like, I think that's never more evident than when you hear Marcus Golden talk. This is him to me yesterday when somebody asked him, hey, Marcus, do you consider yourself elite? This is what he had to say.
Of course I consider myself an elite player. I've been working hard my whole life to be elite and working on my craft to get better. And what makes me elite, I have to say my speed. I was a 2,000-yard running back. I played running back my whole life when a kid growing up, and I played all over the football field, quarterback, all type of positions. So I just used that into one position from me playing when I was a little kid in high school to now, and I just use it all together, and then I come out and just put my talents on, and I feel like I can go up against anybody.
That's not special with Marcus Golden. Like, Marcus Golden is incredibly, like, fun to listen to, and he's just a really cool guy to hear talk, and especially with his low baritone voice. But that's something that the entire team feels. Like, Jimmy Hunt believes he's one of the best wide receivers in the country. Mitch Morse believes he's one of the best offensive tackles in the country. It's same thing with Evan Bayham at center. Matty Mock is a quarterback. Like, these guys believe that they're not just good. They believe that they're some of the best players in the country. They believe that they are the best team in the country, and they're trying to prove it to everybody with every single week. And I'm not saying they're the best team in the country, but as I look around the rankings and I look around what there is in college football this year, there's no perfect team like we're used to seeing. Alabama's not as good as usual. Florida State is not as good as they were last year. They all have flaws. So why not Missouri? Like, why can't Missouri win the SEC East and make a run at this thing again?
Whenever you were describing those teams, I thought of Oregon, and then I thought, well, Oregon's Oregon, and they somehow
always lose a game. They always fall one game, and they should have lost this weekend.
Oh.
Somehow they end up coming back, and they make that a blowout. But Oregon didn't look good for about three quarters there against Michigan State.
I think that kind of like there are a lot of teams in college football, Oregon being the chief among them, where people love them for the aesthetics. Like,
yeah,
they are
yeah.
very fun to watch.
They're Texas A&M's one of those teams.
Of course. And then there's Mizzou, where they are a very good team. And I think some people who don't watch Mizzou on a daily basis wouldn't think they're fun to watch in comparison to those Oregons, to those whoever you want to name out there. So I think now, I think as far as taking a stab at the mentality within the Mizzou team, which is always just an assumption.
Yeah.
I think it's more, I don't think that they really care about what people think about them anymore. I think it's more like, all right, we know we're great, so if you're going to believe in that, then cool. But in the meantime, we're just going to keep winning football games. Like, I think that Marcus Golden is pretty much personifies that more than anybody else could. So
I just... There's something about this team that feels special. Like, there's something about watching them, the big plays that they make, the amount of just talent all over the field that they have. I'm buying in. Now, when Georgia comes to Missouri on October 11th, am I expecting Missouri to win that game? No, but I believe that they have a chance. I believe that they have as good of a chance as anybody to beat Georgia. I think the defense is a little bit underrated. I think that the pass rush is one of the best in the country. I mean, you have Shane Ray go for 2 sacks last week. Him and Marcus Golden combined have like 8.5 on the year in the first 2 games. It's crazy the numbers that they're putting up. And then you look at Matty Mock last week, and he looked a little shaky in week 1. No question about it. He had his issues. But then he comes back in week 2 and has 6 touchdowns and is named the SEC Offensive Player of the Week. Like, this guy is better than I think all of us expected him to be this early in his career.
I think some of that has to do with the fact that we've seen bits and pieces of Maddie Mock throughout, I guess last year especially, because James Franklin was out, and other times that James Franklin has been out, because there have been many times where James Franklin yes. was out. But I think now people have to adjust to seeing him on a consistent basis, so people aren't used to seeing him have an off game and then come back and have a great game, because we only saw him in bits and pieces where he was either really bad at that time mm-hmm. or really good at that time, not a mixture of both.
And we talked to Maddie yesterday about, like, his demeanor and his mindset, I guess, if you will. And he talked about, like, how he kind of sees himself as a Brett Favre type. Like, he's a gunslinger. He's going to take chances. He's going to go for it all. Sometimes those chances are going to lead to interceptions. And that's just kind of the nature of his game. But at the end of the day, when you have a guy go 21 for 32, he has 330 yards and 5 touchdowns. You can live with 2 picks mm-hmm. because he's going to make plays that other quarterbacks simply don't make in college football. They're just not – they don't have the arm capabilities that Maddie Mock does. And so I think that this team will go as far as Maddie Mock takes them, and I think that could be an SEC title again. I really do. I mean, who is better than this team right now in the SEC East outside of Georgia?
I think
Georgia is a better team, but I think on any given day Georgia can lose.
Uh-huh.
I don't think South Carolina's better. Mm-mm. I'm not convinced that Texas A&M is better. I want to see at least a couple more games of them before I'm able to say that. And then the rest of the SEC,
Vandy.
Who knows? We'll get into Vandy here in a few weeks whenever Mizzou plays them. That in a few weeks when it's game week. That's about as close as we're going to get to discussing Vandy seriously on this show. But coming up next, Kevin Van Valkenburg wrote about Ray Rice's situation for ESPN the magazine a month ago. We'll get his thoughts on the latest developments next on the Morning Blitz, KCOU 88.1 FM, and online, KCOU.fm. And welcome back in. It is the Morning Blitz here on KCOU 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.fm. We have misplaced Kevin Van Valkenburg, so we will hopefully have him on the show soon, within the next few days, whenever he can do it. Kevin Van Valkenburg. Supposed to join the show here. He will not. So I want to get back into the Ray Rice discussion. And coming up in 10 minutes, the season looks like it's over before it ever began. But so I guess the biggest question for me about the NFL, and obviously we don't have the answers to this, but might as well speculate, right? What did they know and when? And the other question that's a follow-up, does it matter how much they knew? Because to me, it seems incredibly unlikely that nobody in the NFL saw this video. Mm-hmm. And if that is the case, and if nobody saw the video, why didn't they see this video? Because I'm not buying this whole, the police wouldn't give it to us, so therefore we didn't ask for it from anybody else. Major League Baseball just paid millions of dollars for a biogenesis report. Millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And you're telling me that you didn't seek out a video that possibly had incriminating evidence of one of your players under the shield punching a woman in the face? And if that's the case, that's negligence on Roger Goodell's part. I just don't see how that's possible. I don't see how the NFL can possibly claim that they haven't seen the video. And if they do claim that, then that's just as big of a problem. That's an even bigger problem.
Yeah. This morning, TMZ, who originally released the Ray Rice video yesterday, said that the NFL never contacted the casino mm-hmm. to request video that we all saw. So I think that kind of goes back to, like I said, look, whenever we first discussed this in the first segment, for us, that video was unavoidable. For the NFL, they didn't have to see it if they didn't want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it goes back to confirmation bias. They didn't want to believe what obviously happened. So I think that, hey, we're not going to seek it out because then we can claim, oh, we didn't know. We can claim whatever they're going to claim. But I think I don't even know if there are any words to describe how like you said, how negligent that is to not want to know the entire any evidence that's available to you. I don't know why you wouldn't want.
And Roger Goodell's a lawyer. Roger Goodell's an attorney. Like, this is his job. If he's good at anything, it should be prosecuting these cases, because that's literally how he got the job, mm-hmm. because he's a really good attorney. That's how he came to be. Like, he was on the attorney's board or whatever for the NFL. And he was really good at it, and so he continued getting promoted until he apparently got promoted one position too high, because clearly he's in over his head as the NFL commissioner. And I just, the idea that the NFL didn't investigate this and didn't vet this thoroughly while they were watching a player go through all of this, go through all of this media firestorm, and they didn't vet it. Like, they just flat out didn't get enough information. And I don't know how, if you're the NFL and you know that there's video of this, and you know that he's in a casino, and you know that everything in a casino is under surveillance, especially whenever we've already seen a video of him dragging his unconscious wife out of the elevator, how do you not seek out that video? How do you not make sure that you have evidence of this video before you act on anything when you know it's going to get out?
Because they wanted it to go away.
I mean, but you have to know, you have to be more forward thinking than that.
I'm not making excuses for them.
You're not.
I'm just saying I think that's what it was. I think that they just were like, all right, we'll just admit that we were wrong with this and move forward and suspend other guys differently. But TMZ was like, nah, we're going to release this video.
Well, if they didn't, somebody right. would. I mean, if you look back, and Kevin Van Valkenburg had a great tweet last night. He said, to review, Spygate, evidence destroyed, lockout, money, bounty gate, completely botched, concussions, ignored, Redskins, la la la, no comment, Ray Rice, oops. I mean, I don't know how to better sum up Roger Goodell's tenure as the commissioner of the NFL. It's been just a sequence of poor handling of events just like this. Like, not all of them were domestic abuse cases, granted. But, I mean, with the concussions, that's hugely important, and he completely botched it.
Yeah.
With the Spygate scandal, hugely important, he completely botched it. I mean, everything basically that comes down under Roger Goodell's tenure has been, oh, we don't have enough evidence for that.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't know. Yeah. Oh, we're not really sure. Oh, yeah, we didn't know that at the time. Oh, yeah, well, we didn't have all the information given to us at the time, but now we do, so now we're going to go ahead and change
our
ruling.
You're the NFL. Seek out that information.
You can get it.
Yeah.
Like, it is there if you want it.
I think it probably was Bomani Jones, or a lot of people said this yesterday. They know everything about every player who comes into the draft in the NFL, but they didn't want to seek out the evidence for this. Like, it doesn't match up at all. Like, why would you? I don't know. I guess because they're not, I have no idea. I guess maybe their thinking is, oh, we're not liable for knowing everything about this player, but it's just like, I don't know. I have no idea. It's frustrating to even talk about, because there's nothing that